Hello, Lake Tahoe, and welcome to the Lake Tahoe Art Scene with me, Robert Schimmel, your host for Who's Who and What's Happening Around Lake Tahoe in the Arts. Appreciate you turning in and tuning in today. And if you believe in as well as support the mission of this program, which is to expand the understanding and influence of the arts around the lake, as well as develop an arts identity for Lake Tahoe, please consider becoming a sponsor of the Lake Tahoe Art Scene by contacting me, Robert, at kthoradio.com. My guest today is Mel Smothers. He's a fine artist, painter, and musician who professes a call from childhood to our high and thin mountain air that included always being at home drawing and painting. His artistic background owns an MFA from the University of Idaho in studio art and art history, as well as being an art collector and ongoing full-time professional artist. His career documents being a broadcast journalist, wilderness ranger, stagehand, lecturer, correspondent, life painting instructor, fiddle player, musician, volunteerism, and much more. So we got some great influences to talk about today. And Mel, welcome so much to the program and joining me today.
Thanks, Robert.
Yeah, you've got quite a history of art that sounds like it began right out of the cradle practically. And can you kind of bring us up to speed as to why art became your focus and Lake Tahoe maybe your home?
Well, I think I've always been an artist, but I didn't know that for a long time. I was always trying to fit in and do things that what I thought was the way people would want me to do things.
Well, that's always dangerous, isn't it?
And then when I was in my 40s, and I was talking to my mom about that, that I had this interest in drawing, and I just can't leave it alone. And she went into the closet and drug out paintings that she had kept from kindergarten, finger paint and all that. And I could remember doing them.
Awesome.
So that was a great connection.
Sure.
And along with reading about art, there's a book about if you go back and find artwork, your earliest artwork you can find, you'll pick up from there. And that's exactly what I did that this book had said. And then I just decided I needed to somehow find the way to get an education. It was all a big mystery, and that's what got me started. And that led to going on to get a master's degree and studying under Wayne Thiebaud. Some real terrific things.
Rather late in life. Under the circumstances, but it still, wow, what an influence.
Yeah. Very much. And, yeah. And that has to do with having to make a living.
Ugh.
I was having a real hard time of it in my 20s.
Yeah.
And I wound up here at Lake Tahoe paying off jackpots one winter. Looking for things, you know, where do you fit in?
Sure.
You always felt you had to make some money, and the art never made any money. I would go to flea markets. I would make things.
Sure.
But I had no idea. I had no sense of art history that somebody like Picasso wasn't suddenly born and people started buying their work.
Of course.
I had the wrong perception. I was just a young guy.
When you first came to Tahoe, what year was that? Late 60s, early 70s?
Yeah, right in there. Okay. Late 60s, 70s, early 70s. The casino job.
You and I probably crossed paths many times. I was first up here in 1970.
Yeah, that was probably it.
Crazy.
I worked a graveyard shift at Harris.
Yeah,
they gave me a job, which allowed me to live in Lake Tahoe.
The rest is history, sort of. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, okay. So you then, I mean, in leapfrogging ahead, because you've got so many interesting experiences to look back on. But you are currently doing a very interesting series that you call the Andy Dialogues.
You're right.
Or something like that, correct?
Okay. Yeah.
So you're quoted from 2013 that, "I found myself caught between the feelings of satisfaction with painting taught by Wayne Thiebaud's pop art, and troubled by the art world opposite, art valued by material process, celebrity and money, represented by Warhol's pop art. So I found an answer by painting postcards to Warhol that began in 2005. Okay, that's just incredibly interesting. How did you find a particular muse that led you to do that sort of thing? And what generated that ultimately?
Well, it has a lot to do with one's education, the things you find in life, and through my travels, I found myself becoming a Buddhist.
Gotcha.
And part of that is that when you're troubled by something, you look for an answer, right. And that really fits for my philosophy.
Okay.
You know? So
perfect.
I on the West Coast, I'm a novice on learning about art and. There's some very good influential professors that I've had, but Thiebaud stands out. And I felt that art was all about creating beautiful paintings or sculpture. That's what it is. And that's what fit me.
Sure.
My personality.
Sure.
Among artists, they call it pushing paint.
Gotcha.
And there's a thrill that you get from pushing paint that, to me, is unlike anything else I've ever done.
Amen.
And it overshadows, at least with me, it overshadows my need for money. I'd rather push paint and then somehow figure out the money.
Right.
So as I was learning more about art and consuming and digesting everything, and in graduate school, I was lucky enough to take a class in New York City. And it was a real eye-opener, as it should be, along with all the social and cultural problems that I'd have from going from a mountain town to New York City. The other thing was how art was viewed
right.
in New York.
Right.
And I came with this sort of an idealistic love of paint and pushing paint. And it was very hard for me. The more I got absorbed into the New York art scene, that really didn't have much to do with it.
Sure.
It was who you knew, the privilege of who you were. And it was sort of, because I was a student of art history and loved art history, you go back and start questioning a lot of the people that we know through art history came about not necessarily because they were an artist, a true artist that pursuing this inner love.
Sure.
Which, that's what how I'd learned with my education in California. That's what I had learned was true art.
Yeah.
So it was a real wake-up call, and I found myself getting very angry. I would go, one of the goals that I had set when I moved to New York was to get a pass to the Met and go to the Met as often as I could. I'd like to say I went every day. It wasn't that often, but it was several times. You know, I mean, I guess what I want to say, two or three times a week is what I want to say.
Yeah.
And, of course, it's an incredible experience.
Oh, absolutely.
Anybody that does it, you realize how important that is for an artist. But as I became more knowledgeable, then I start seeing these things where artists were in the Met that I no longer felt I was under the greatness.
Sure.
I was going... It started making sense to me that there's another side of art.
They're really human, yeah.
And it made me angry that people would be in the Met, and I knew people that painted in California that were doing a much better job. So that became an anger with me.
Okay.
And the way I resolved that was I found myself I would go fishing in New York City, different things that I was doing to survive in New York City. But I thought that led me to be at Andy Warhol's estate. He had bought this estate out in Montauk, which is along the ocean.
Yeah,
beautiful
absolutely.
Area. And he never went out there very much. It didn't appeal to him. But it really appealed to somebody from California, someone like myself. And I loved it out there. And I could see this inconsistency or, I don't want to say, just opposite. More of an opposite thing. And I felt that if I was like Andy's nephew out at his estate And I sent him postcards from the things I found to him in New York City. It suddenly was an answer to me, and my anger was sort of alleviated. It gave me a direction and a goal, and it felt like this fit into this upper edge of art where the content now matched. It gave me an opportunity to use paint the way I wanted to use paint and have a content that worked on an East Coast art scene.
Okay.
I had this dialogue that I started with Andy.
Sure.
And when you were kind of questioning or searching for the words that I call it, the titles have changed over the years.
Yeah.
They first started out, I'm painting over Andy. And then it came that Dear Andy.
Okay.
And now it's evolved to the Andy dialogues.
Yeah.
But they all go into one body of work that's about 500 paintings and etchings.
And I thought I read somewhere it was 250 or 300. That may have been posted way long ago. So you were up to that. That's amazing. Is there a dominant, and not to belabor this because we got so much to cover, but is there a dominant medium and or theme that you've sussed out over the course of the time?
Well, when you say medium, definitely. And that comes from graduate school, that I approach the canvas the same every time, where I'm using acrylic, I'm using chalk, I'm using oil pastels.
Okay.
And then I'll seal all that in. And I like to use an epoxy to seal it all in. And then after that, it's all oil paint.
Oh, and, interesting. On top. Okay.
It's just a process that I came across in graduate school that I really liked, and I keep pursuing that and little subtle changes in that over the years, and I'm totally happy painting that way today, and using that process.
Are these dialogues, so to speak, because probably there's so much dialogue going on inside you as you paint, but the result, unless you are accompanying it with actual written context, are they all literally postcard size things, or are they vary in size and so forth?
Well, Robert, the only postcard size ones I did were just original sketches when I got the idea.
Sure.
And I had done lots of postcards in the past to my son, different people that I've communicated on a postcard
yeah.
thing. But the Andy, the Dear Andy's, quickly went to, like 6 feet by 5 feet.
I
was living in a loft in New York with big walls, and I loved painting big. So I had no interest in really painting small.
Sure.
It was all part of the romance of what I was doing in New York City and living in a loft. So my first ones were the biggest. And I don't think I've painted anything that big since, but I just love making them huge and calling them postcards.
Yeah, most artists do. They love getting into the medium in a big way, and it. I think it. Yeah, I mean, you feel involved.
That's it. It's your whole environment.
It is. Yeah,
it pulls you right in.
Your current project, and I need to move us along because I could keep this up, but I would like to at least let our folks know what you're currently doing. And there's a project. You seem to be a series and project-oriented guy from all the things I've seen on your website. Mm-hmm. And, folks, that website is melsmothers.com, just the way it sounds, melsmothers.com. Take a look. He's got a dozen things to look at from that website. So you've got this old California landscape series you're doing or something like that, right?
Right, right. It's called the Old Tahoe Highway. And last fall, a good friend and a curator, we met at Miami at the Art Basel, the week in Miami that's always a big deal, and she'd never been there. I've been going to it for a half dozen years or so, and so we met there, and she invited me to show with a landscape show that she's putting together. And it's going to be highlighted by Wayne Thiebaud. And
nice.
The artists that are going to be shown in this group show are all going to be former students of Wayne's.
Excellent.
And it's in the Morris Graves Museum that's in Eureka. So that because of that, and I was very honored.
Yeah.
And at first I thought, geez, you know, I've got, again, 100 or more landscapes and some really nice ones from before I went to New York that I'm real happy with. But she planted the idea that why don't I just see what a landscape looks like today, painting the landscape today.
Sure.
And I have a studio down in the Florida Keys. So when I closed that up in December and came back, my main objective was to just focus on landscapes. And that's what I've been doing. It's a lot of fun. It's very challenging to kind of reinvent yourself as a landscape painter and try and take in everything that you've found before. So I don't want to paint what I painted before.
Gotcha. How many of us do, you know, that are really into it? Yeah, I mean, the art expression, you can't just keep doing. We do have to survive, but at the same time, that exploration is what makes it supersede any monetary thing. You know, your artwork is so rich in textural strokes, and I'm going to say this for the benefit of our audience. You seem to focus on singular objects. It's almost iconic in some of the ways you approach some of the work. Mm-hmm. And then the series I saw one of your big public projects down in wherever it was with the cranes or the seagulls or whatever.
Oh,
that,
yeah, right.
That
right.
was awesome. And I'm blurting all this out to get people to look because we're actually out of time. And I know that we've got so much. It's like, oh my goodness. In closing, what is a current project or something you'd like people to see or what you're doing? And, you know, just real quick closing thought.
The current series, it's more than just painting. Again, like when I went to New York, I realized the content of my painting is very important to me, and that keeps me going. And there are a lot of trails that come up from the ocean, the Pacific Ocean, across the Sierras. And there's the two highways, Highway 50 and 80, on both sides of the lake. Those evolved after a long, long time of different peoples that were traveling across the Sierra. But I have come across different trails up in the backcountry that were used at one time. And you can see where they're used at commerce 400 or 500 years ago. So my current series, I hike those trails and I take images, landscape images that I haven't seen before, that I think are unique to that trail.
Very cool.
And so that's what I'm painting now. And that's what I'd like people to know or see when they come. That's more than just the landscape. There's something in there that keeps me painting.
Absolutely.
Content.
Man, I love your spirit and enthusiasm. Okay, contact places for you besides the melsmothers.com. Anything else, a phone number or email or anything like that?
Well, the website's actually the best place.
Okay.
You go in there, there's an email. Or if you just want to be anonymous and get a flyer, I try and do maybe a weekly tweet or so from my studio, what I'm up to. It's just kind of fun. I just enjoy doing things
nice.
Like that. So that's the way of getting a hold of us through the
Perfect.
Website.
Well, folks, thanks for joining Mel and me today. And Mel, thank you very much.
All right. Well, I appreciate it.
Oh, my gosh. We only just got started, and this is going to have to be a part 2 and 3 going on. Folks, have a great arts week out there. God bless you for listening. Take care. Bye-bye.